Welcome to episode 277 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on April 1st, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, some services are coming and some services are leaving. We talk about the general availability of Bring Your Own IP or BYOIP, as well as general availability of the new Azure Front Door service. Those services going away are classic storage accounts in Azure, as well as Azure Data Lake Analytics. We also close out talking about some of our tips and tricks for tracking these service announcements.
We finally made it to another Friday. It's the fifth Friday in a row. Like literally Monday was Friday, Tuesday was Friday, Wednesday was Friday, Thursday was Friday. Now it's Friday, and we actually get to log off when we're done.
How did you get five Fridays in a row?
Because I've wanted it to be Friday before the week even started.
Oh, that bad?
That's how my week's going.
Wow. That's a bad week.
Well,
you didn't go participate in the MVP summit and learn all about all the stuff. Not an MVP. I didn't go. I have no idea what went on that week, this week. But I did hear Microsoft employees can still attend, although you probably know everything already anyways.
I'm on the side of the house that would do things like present roadmaps to the MVPs, at least for object and data lake storage. So I'm all good there.
Got it. Perfect. So I can ask you what went on this week, and then you can say NDA.
And then I can say, yes, I can't tell you.
If I am ever in that boat, I'm not going to be one of those people that like tweets, MVP summit, blah, 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 and then like an image of NDA. That's just annoying. Sorry, MVPs that do that. You annoy me.
I think it counts as part of your contributions for the year, right? Well, you can say I did 368 tweets with the hashtag MVP buzz that all came down. But that is neither here nor there. So yes, MVP summit is going on, and the MVPs are getting an early look at what's coming next across all the wonderful Microsoft products. But the world continues to spin outside of MVP summit, and there are other things that have been announced and are starting to go GA. Yes. And for some others, they're starting to go away. So where do you want to start with some of that?
Well, before that, kind of tied into MVP, another thing to just keep in mind, keep an eye on, is that Build was announced. Build 2022 is all virtual. There's no registration yet or anything, but what is it? mybuild.microsoft.com or something like that? mybuild.microsoft.com. Build is coming May 24 through 26, all virtual. Go keep an eye on the website for registration, and then you can hear all about what the MVPs talked about this week. But aside from that, had to sneak that in. So where do I want to start? This was an interesting one. I sent it to you when I finally caught up on a bunch of my blog posts today, was you can now bring your own IP address. BYOIP or BYOIP?
Yeah, let's go with the latter just because I want to hear you say it a bunch of times.
BYOIP?
Yeah. It sounds like... It sounds like a little robot out of Adventure Time or, some show my kids watch.
All right. So BYOIP to Azure with custom IP prefixes. You can now bring your own IP address to Azure.
You can. So this has been in preview, and it has taken that flip from preview to GA. And it's nice and solidified and just ready to go. So if you're a customer who is in Azure today and you've been potentially frustrated around some of the limitations with VNets and subnets and having to be in, what are they, RFC 1918 compliant IP ranges, effectively like private IP ranges. You're in 10.0, 192.168, things like that. If that's been a limiting factor, you can actually bring over public IP ranges now. So there's a little bit of prerequisite work that goes on here. You need to bring a public IP range that you actually own. So that needs to be owned, and you need to be tagged as the owner of that through a routing internet registry. So typically that would be something like Aaron. When you bring that IP range over to Azure, You continue to own it. So as far as your internet registry is concerned, like, you know, let's say it's Aaron, in that case, you still have ownership, but you're giving Microsoft permission to advertise back to from our wide area network back out to your size. There's some other limitations.
Yeah. So you're kind of just like delegating it to Microsoft.
A little bit, yeah. There's some advertisements that need to go on there just to make sure that stuff can still route around and get in the right way. The other thing to think about is if you're bringing an IP range that you own, it can't be smaller than a /24. So you certainly have capabilities where you can do a /25, you can do a /26, /27, /28 with the kind of current RFC 1918 compliant IP ranges. But if you're going to bring your own, it's going to have to be a whole /24, so 256 IPs to be able to get it over and bring it over as a custom IP prefix resource within Azure.
And then it looks like each of these ranges, once you onboard, is associated with an Azure region. I'm assuming you can't split it across regions.
Right.
Well, like you're saying this range goes to this region.
Yeah, think about it this way. So it's a, from the Azure side of things, there's going to be a resource in Azure that you're managing that represents your custom IP range, and resources live in regions. Even the metadata for something that's not exactly regional, like take a resource group, for example, you know, you can have a resource group in East US, but all your resources could be in West Europe. And that's totally fine. Like that's okay. But you still at least some point, some metadata about that resource needs to live someplace. So in this case, it's not just metadata about it, but the resource itself. So say you had two public IP ranges you wanted to bring over, and those were going to be associated with two different regions. That means you're going to need two blocks that are at least a /24 that you want to bring over, and then you would associate each one of those blocks or that IP range with a custom IP range resource per region that you're spinning up.
So I'm assuming too that you have to have, like, this is going to have to be a region that you're not using anywhere on premises either. Like, all of a sudden, this range of IP addresses is moving from your on-premises router, your on-premises gateway up to Azure. So you have to have like an extra range that you can move. This can't be in use anywhere on premises.
It can't be in use anywhere. Like you're going to bring the block over and then you're going to have all the advertisements back from our WAN across to kind of get it all up and running.
Across. Yeah. And then I'm assuming any outgoing, like let's say you go bring this block up there, you assign it to a region, and then you can start assigning these public IP addresses in this range to resources like a VM. That VM outgoing IP is now going to be that same IP that you assigned. You're essentially, while you're maintaining ownership, you're moving that specific IP address into Azure.
Pretty much. So you're going to use these IPs that you bring over through your custom IP range with public IP resources. So you're going to have something like you might take that range of IPs and then go ahead and associate it with a bunch of resources that'll be associated with those public IP prefixes. So that'll be things like a standard SKU public IP. And then you're going to take that PIP resource that you've created and associate it back to things like load balancers, firewalls, certainly virtual machines, you know, if you had like NVAs, things like that, that you wanted to spin up and associate those with. The cool thing about it is really they're just like, it's effectively metadata at that point, like on the Azure side. So there's really no charge for the resource. You're still going to be charged for things like egress bandwidth from the IPs that are from the public IP resources that are bound to that custom IP range and hence bound to a resource behind them. And then, of course, any charges that come with that attached resource as well.
Right, because you're not actually charged for the IP prefixes or the addresses or any of that management. Like, this is essentially free to move it up there, you just get charged the typical networking fees.
And resource fees. So keep in mind when you're spinning up things.
Okay, so like, if you're doing like a PIP, public IP.
Yeah, so that's a charge for you. And then there's certainly egress through those things. And then the additional charge would be whatever you're binding that PIP to. Like if I take that PIP and bind it to a load balancer, there's usually things like VMs or a scale set or some other resource that lives behind all that. And that resource is going to cost you money at the end of the day anyway. So really all to say, if you have custom IP ranges that you want to bring over and they kind of fit within the constraints of what's here, you can really bring those over and leverage them in Azure for free. And there's no additional cost over what you've already been doing today with your other existing resources like PIPs, load balancers, VMs, VM scale sets, AKS clusters, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. Dynamic public IP addresses. I don't see this in here. I was looking through it. If you bring over that range and you're not assigning that IP to like a public IP address or assigning it to a specific resource, you know how with VMs now, if you do public IPs, you deallocate them, they come back up and they can get a random IP. Do you have that same ability within your range that you brought over? Or do you have to always assign these as essentially static public IP addresses? Do you know? Did you see that anywhere?
Well, you're assigning them to a resource like that PIP. So if the PIP goes away, you delete the PIP, you've effectively unallocated the IP. It is still associated with the custom IP resource, like that metadata piece of it. And it would just be available to use on another PIP if you were to spin one back up.
Something else. So if you're doing a dynamic PIP, you could do dynamic IP addresses in that range.
From that range, yes.
That should still work.
Usually you're not doing that, like unless you're somebody like... Don't take this the wrong way, Ben, but like that sounds like you're being a little you're being a little cheap and stingy there. Like, you know, just go ahead and spend a little bit of money and allocate that IP and keep it online all the time. And arguably, if you own a public IP range and you're registered, narrowed, and ready to go, you've already spent that money anyway, and you're used to spending that money, so this isn't that big a lift. It just gives you a bunch more flexibility when it comes to being able to present your infrastructure that's hosted in the cloud or particularly within Azure as truly like public infrastructure. It could be an extension of, you know, existing on-premises assets, like you said, like maybe you have a data center on-premises and that's associated with one block of IPs and then you're able to extend that out to Azure and get it on the other side.
Yep. Well, I was thinking like dev and test. That's where I keep my dynamic IPs that just always changes. I deallocate my random test VMs at night and then they always get new IP addresses because I am cheap and then it's not always the same IP address. But anyways, it is also limited to the other things I noticed. This is only IPv4 right now. IPv6 is not supported. And the other thing is if you want to do availability zones with these, the prefix has to be specified as either zone redundant or assigned to a specific zone. You can't like take the range and specify it with no zone in the region. So all those IP addresses in that same prefix, in that same range, have to have those same zonal properties.
Correct. Yep.
I noticed that one. I think that was the biggest thing. I think we hit most of the stuff I noticed.
And this is really for public routing kind of scenarios. It's not for routing from, you know, your IP range back to on-prem through Express Router, things like that. So there's potentially some things that can happen there. Like you can't have the advertisement of IPs from that custom IP prefix resource that you've created up in Azure go and be advertised back over Express Route. So there's some other support things that could potentially bite you if you think they're going to work that way. But it's GA documentations, all up to date. You know, you can create these through the portal. You can create them through PowerShell. You can manage them, do all the things that you need to do. You know, you can spin it up and you decide, this isn't what I thought it was. You can decommission that prefix. You can deprovision, delete, kind of whatever you want to do within it.
Nifty. I don't have a block of 256 IP addresses. So I'm not going to be testing this one out, but I can definitely see where the use case for this could be very valuable.
Yeah. Go test your credit card and go buy. I haven't looked in a while, but there's probably not any left to buy. Those were eaten up a long time ago because they are all IPv4. And yeah, the people who own them for a reason.
Right. And that's a big block. Like even some of the small, medium-sized businesses I've worked for, they buy them in like blocks of 5 or 10 or 15, not 256.
Buy more. Be bigger. That's the goal here.
Be bigger so I can buy some that somebody else owns so I have enough money to, yeah. Not going to happen. Anyways, what other news was there? That was my pick. What's your pick?
That was one of the ones pointed you to. So come on.
No, I texted that one to you today. That was mine. Oh, I texted it first.
Okay. I see how it goes.
This is podcast squabbles.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
And another service GA'd as well on the networking side of the house. So the new iteration of Azure Front Door or AFD is now out and available. So AFD has been out there for a while. I think it launched 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. It was like 2019, 2020-ish that it came out and kind of launched in its what was kind of its current iteration. And now the latest version of that is out. And I think, you know, it's geared more towards being like a truly modern, like operate like a modern CDN, and also geared a little bit more towards enterprise, maybe than even like the original Front Door was, where it seemed to be targeted maybe a little bit more kind of like cloud first organizations. You know, I'm building my website, I'm cloud native, I want to front a storage account and an Azure web app and, you know, these kind of like single pass resources through on the other side. But yeah, it's out there. But one of the impacts of this is that Azure Front Door is now like you've effectively got like Azure Front Door, which is really the new thing. And then if you were already yep. on AFD and you're not making that transition over, you're like, the vNext features aren't for me, then you've got Azure Front Door Classic. And you still also have Azure CDN from Microsoft, which is now got a nice set of parentheses at the end of that as well to kind of think about it as Azure CDN from Microsoft. Classic.
Is it too much to ask that people like keep naming conventions the same in terms of as you update the new versions? Because there was just one I was working with today, is that Azure? I can't even remember. There was another one that they came out with the updated version of it, or even like storage. Azure Storage, you have Azure Storage V1, and then you have Azure Storage V2. So why isn't it Azure Storage Classic and Azure Storage V2? Let's like get some consistency here. Or is that too much to ask?
I think it's too much to ask. Maybe when conferences are a thing again and you and I can sit down, I'll introduce you to some marketing folks.
Because like Classic too, I also think ASM, because it was like the Azure Classic portal, but now you have Classic that's ASM and you have Storage V1, which is ASM, I believe. And then some V2s or some classics are ARM, and it's just all confusing.
It does get a little confusing out there. And I think probably even more confusing lately, particularly with the classic label or that kind of verbiage. There's been a number of deprecations or specifically announcements of things that are leaving. Like you're getting your 3-year notice that, hey, this is going away. And I'll kind of pivot to it because you mentioned it. So
because I brought it up. Did you like that? I did that intentionally.
I did. Look how you did that. That was very, very, very slick of you, right? But yes, classic storage accounts, which when I say classic storage accounts, I'm not referring to a GPV1 storage account. I'm referring to a ASM storage account. And those are going to be retired on the same date that Azure Cloud Services are going away as well. So if you were familiar with Azure Cloud Services Classic or just ACS, that was announced back in August that it was going to hit its 3-year retirement timeline. And classic storage accounts or ASM storage accounts weren't announced at the same time. But because classic storage accounts depend on cloud services, they kind of have to go at the same date. So that just makes sense. You know, unfortunately for the classic storage accounts announcement, it's not within that. I think that goal of 3 years before it deprecates out. But because they already announced that Azure Cloud Services are going away, there's really no way that these things would continue to exist either. So there's some downstream impacts there. Like, if you're still using ASM today, you know, it's near and dear to my heart. Like, that's when I got started with Azure, was in the classic days. And, you know, I remember when the whole portal was in beta. You know, everything was really fun back then. And stuff would go down. And it was really, you know, that first iteration of Azure, like, didn't even have VMs. Infrastructure as a service, yes, was kind of a pie in the sky idea at that point. It was really focused on web development, automated deployment through things like cloud services to spin things up. So if you're still using those today, you really need to come up with a plan to transition off of them. You've got a couple years to figure that out. They are good through August 31st, 2024. But at least in the case of storage accounts and classic storage accounts, as of August 1st this calendar year, so 2022, you will not be able to create those anymore. So should you want to avoid service disruptions, please, please, please migrate your old stuff over to the new stuff. It might not be as straightforward as it should be, so plan early, plan often, go ahead and execute.
Is there a good way to see everything that you may have running in Classic? If people are like, I don't even know what I have running in Classic or if there's anything left. Like, you can go search in Azure for Classic and all those services will come up. Like, you'll get SAS Classic and Disks Classic and OS Images Classic, VM Images Classic, Cloud Services Classic. Is there a good way to see everything that you might have in Classic? Like, does Cloud Services Classic show everything, or is that just, you can create a new one?
It's been a long time. Like, I haven't even looked at that. So it's been years since I've had a Classic resource in anything.
Yeah, I don't think I have any, but I was just trying to see if there was a good way. I don't think I have anything. If I go to all resources, manage view, show hidden, simplified. Yeah, I don't know. If somebody knows of a way, add a filter. Resource group type, kind, location, edge zone, tags, environment, demos, version. It's probably not going to get me anything. Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know of a way to just go see, do I have any classic stuff left?
One way that I could think of would be the PowerShell commands, like PowerShell CLI, things like that. They support searching by resource type. So when you think about virtual machines, let's say like classic virtual machines versus ARM virtual machines,
yep,
you know how everything lives within a resource provider in ARM? So if you're doing a virtual machine, it might be microsoft.compute/virtual machines. And then you have all the endpoints for VMs underneath that within that RP, and you can interact with it through the APIs, all those things, blah, blah, blah. All to say that Classic resources also show up under ARM, but even though they're classic resources, because the whole classic portal and everything has been gone for a long time.
It's just gone.
Yes. Yep. So you have to have a way to surface those through ARM, even though they're in the classic system. And one of the good ways to do that is by dialing into certain resource types, or really, like, think about a resource provider a different way, like bubble it up a level. So if microsoft.compute/virtual machines is the kind of new way to do virtual machines, and it's the established way to do it for a few years now. If you wanted to look for any of your classic VMs, you could theoretically go through and loop through and look for things that are of like the resource type Microsoft.classiccompute/virtual machines. And you can kind of do that across the things that still exist out there when it comes to like the compute resource provider, NRP, network resource provider, or SRP, storage resource provider.
Got it. Are they all of type like Microsoft Classic something?
From everything I remember in the way back when I looked at it, yes, that is where they all sit today.
Because I was just looking at Azure Resource Graph Explorer too. Like you could, because you could potentially just pull it up right in that Graph Explorer with a query as well.
You might be able to, as long as the piece of metadata for the resource type is in there, you might be able to do like a quick KQL query and just do a, you know, resource type contains classic or dot classic or anything like that and pull back the whole list.
Yeah, interesting.
Stuff goes away and you have to plan for it. It happens. And another one that I can think of that was announced for retirement on an accelerated schedule. And when I say accelerated schedule, like it doesn't have exactly the full 3-year notice, was Azure Data Lake Analytics is going to be retired on the same day that Azure Data Lake Gen 1 is retired. So Data Lake Gen 1 was deprecated, like retirement was announced in February of 2021. And at the same time, ADLA wasn't announced, but it's kind of like classic storage accounts and cloud services. There's this underlying dependency between them. You know, ADLA works with ADLS Gen 1. So once Gen 1 is gone, ADLA is kind of no good either. So that's an announcement as well. It will be retired on 29 February 2024. Along with Gen 1 when that one sunsets.
That there were a bunch of retirements that have even come out over the last... There were a bunch on the 29th, there were a few on the 28th, some on the 24th. There's been a bunch recently. So one thing, if you're listening to this too and curious about retirements, you might be like, well, how do I keep up with these? The Azure Updates blog, azure.microsoft.com/updates is your best friend, and then they have update type of retirements, and you can go look at the retirement year, or you can just go look at all retirements and filter the results and get a feed or filter out that RSS feed with all of the retirements that are happening and see them as they come down. So Azure Updates, if you don't watch it, go watch that RSS feed.
So can I kind of glom on potentially some other suggestions there?
Yes.
Based on things that...
Absolutely. You can always glom on whatever you feel like, Scott.
Well, just based on some things that I've seen with other customers since I started my time at Microsoft and maybe how we communicate things to customers on the outside. So you and I might be in a place where, hey, we like to be up to date on the news and we know about Azure updates and we follow the RSS feed and we do things like that. And that gives you insights, like you said, to all retirements that are out there. Like that's all well and good, but it doesn't really help you if the only things that you're seeing updates for are potentially services that you don't use. Like they don't directly impact you. You know, you have no classic VMs, you're not using ADLA, you're not using Data Lake Gen 1, classic storage accounts, classic network, and anything like that. Those notices are not just distributed through the public website. They're also distributed through things like direct communications to customers. And direct communications often take the form of, hey, let's send an email to the account admin or co-admin for a subscription. Let's send it to the service admin, the co-service admin. Like, you remember those old roles from Classic?
I do, because yes. Short answer, yes, I remember those.
So I encourage you, like if anybody's listening to this and you're an Azure customer, go take a look at a few of your subscriptions. And specifically, like there, go, you can do it all through the portal. Sign in as a user who has access to view the properties through a for a subscription through the Azure portal. Take a dive in there and go to the subscriptions blade and then go to the properties blade. And if you scroll down on the properties screen, there's the last two fields are account admin and service admin. And if for you, those two accounts, those UPNs, are not actual mailboxes, or they are UPNs that are associated with a mailbox, but that mailbox doesn't accept mail from external senders. Like, let's say you went down the path, and when you spin up your ARM subscriptions, maybe you're like an enterprise admin, an EA customer rather, and you come through the EA side of things and you use those APIs to create subscriptions on the fly. And you probably do things like create those subscriptions with a service principal or a service account. And quite often, service accounts don't have active mailboxes. They're not associated with the real thing. So if you hop into your subscription and you look at the subscription's property blades and you see that things like account admin or service admin are not associated with things that are like actual email addresses and accept mail from the Microsoft.com domain, you're actually probably missing out on a lot of notifications, just because that's the way direct email communications are sent out. Like, there's a bunch of other places that you could have an email address in Azure. You could have a marketing email address. You know, sometimes you sign into the portal. I'm sure if anybody's ever done it, you've seen a little pop-up that says, hey, make sure that your email address is up to date. That's your email address for marketing communications, not for service communications about what's actually happening with the services that you consume in Azure. So, you know, you go in there, make sure though at least one of those two email addresses, or four, depending on how you're set up, make sure one of those is an actual mailbox that accepts email from the Microsoft.com domain. If you take a look at those and you go, oh my gosh, those are all service principals or service accounts, and there's no way I can get a mailbox with them. That's going to cost me money. There's a bunch of lift. I can't change it. It breaks policy, things like that. That's okay. Go configure alerts for service health alerts and for service health advisories. Like, think about those as kind of two classifications for things. So one would be, let me alert on my existing services that exist, and then maybe advisories within specific subsets of services when somebody at Microsoft wants to talk to me about it, but it doesn't directly impact the health of my resource. And you will probably find that if you start and going to and you start going down the path of configuring those things, that you've been and you haven't been getting notifications from Microsoft today, that you're going to start getting a lot more all of a sudden, because we do kind of communicate early often about these things. Like, the expectation isn't that you have to go to the Azure update site to learn that classic storage accounts are going away. If you're using classic storage accounts, that's something that's issued to you as a service health advisory, like, hey, this is all going down. And you want to make sure that you can kind of get that direct communication as well.
Got it. Sounds good and good to know.
It's one of those weird things. I've run into it a lot over, you know, the past 2 years, just sitting down with customers and saying like, oh, you didn't tell us this thing was happening. Like, we did. Yes, we did. We absolutely told you. Here's the date we sent the email. Here's the date we sent the service health alert or the service health advisory. And then they go, oh, I never got the email. Who'd you send it to? Well, I can't. And I don't know who we sent it to, because that's all PII. I don't have access to it. All I can tell you is that storage sent you a thing. But I can tell you who we would have sent it to if you're willing to pull up the portal and look at that. And then we'll pull up the portal and look at that. And they'll go, oh, yeah, there's no mailbox for that, or, you know, there's no way to get in mail from an external sender there. Like, yeah, you really need to if you want these types of communications to come through and get to you.
Yep, definitely. Because something similar, I mean, they do similar things too with Office 365 in terms of those communications coming through to admins and letting them know about stuff that's retiring or changing and all of that. So those email addresses, those admin ones are important from getting those customized notifications, really on both Office 365 and Azure side of the house.
Indeed.
But with that, I actually have a 4 o'clock meeting today.
Wow.
I think you have.
Look at you.
I know. 4 o'clock on a Friday. What's that all about?
I'll tell you what. You go attend my 4 to 6 p.m. meeting, and I will attend what is probably your 4 to 4:30 or 4 to 5. We'll just swap.
My 4 to 5. We'll swap. And then will you do my 3 a.m. training for me too?
No. No, I won't.
Oh,
I will not
do that.
I have to
keep doing that. All right. Sounds good. Well, go enjoy your meeting and enjoy this nice, sunny, warm Florida weekend. And I'm going to do the same.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.